This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next-door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Now, our next guest is Lord Mayor Sally Capp. And, you know, when I was speaking last week, and Dean Smith and I were speaking last week with Grace Tame, and I thought, what an extraordinary woman Grace Tame is. And then I thought, you know, I reckon that's what a young Sally Capp would have been like, a younger Sally Capp would have been like.
Do you?
Principled, honest, authentic, says what she thinks, thinks about what she says, and knows her shit.
And here she is on the line, Mike.
Here she is now.
Good morning to you, Sally.
What an introduction.
Now, can you live up to that, please?
Well, I think, though, that we all find our voices in different ways at different times in our life. And Grace has certainly found hers through extraordinary circumstances and hardship early in her life. And aren't we lucky? I loved that interview. So thank you. We certainly are.
And how are you, Sally? How are you feeling today?
Well, it's a mixture, isn't it? There's the despondency, the desperation, that sense of languishing as we're in lockdown six. But there's also, for me, needs to be that continuous, steely determination not to give up and to be very hopeful and positive about our future. And lucky for me, I get to work on a lot of those sorts of initiatives and really focus on bounce back six.
Good on you, Sally. Sally, when we were preparing the show this morning, we thought, what is it that we'd like to talk about with Sally? And one of the questions that we thought we'd like to put to you is just a bit about your reflections on the planning work that you're doing, leading the council in preparing for a life of lockdowns. You know, this is not going to be the last lockdown. We all know that. This is going to be a feature of the world that we're living in. This is what living with the virus means. So, what's the council doing to prepare for that? What are the planning? What's the planning look like?
Well, look, firstly, can I just say that what this pandemic period has really introduced to our lives is an unpredictability and uncertainty at a scale that we just haven't seen before, because it's right across our community and economy. And I know for many people, you feel like you're trying to grasp onto things that you can rely on, that are stable, that will be continuous. And every time we do that, I know I do it because I'm an optimist. So we come out of a lockdown and I think, oh, that'll be the last one. And then, of course, we have it again. Or we make plans for holidays or for business owners and their teams. They make plans about what the future means. And then all of a sudden that's whipped away by virtue of the virus. And it's been an incredibly difficult, difficult time. So from our perspective at council, it's really been, how do we provide support to sustain people through this period, and how do we add to the momentum that gives more confidence and more certainty? And for us, ultimately now, that discussion about certainty has really turned to vaccination and our role in getting more people vaccinated. This morning in Victoria, we're at 21.3% of people who are fully vaccinated. And as you know, we need to be at 70% as soon as possible. So we've started a comms campaign that is multilingual as well, to make sure we reach as many people as we can. We have a fun incentive campaign to start at the appropriate time. And then in amongst all of that, it's making sure that we have the strongest bounce backs possible. I know that we're in lockdown six and it feels six times harder, but bounce back six has to be the most the most effort that we can bring to attracting people back to the city, to making people feel excited and motivated, and to shift people out of that sense of languishing and into a sense of positivity and flourishing.
Now, a listener has asked us, Sally, do you meditate?
And what do you
do
for your own self-care?
Okay. Well, that's simple. No, I don't.
I'd like to be able to. Maybe that person could teach me how to do it. I don't seem to have the knack for it. But look, what I do is I get so much energy from other people. And because I'm a glass all the way full kind of person, I really get a lot of energy from the planning that's underway. And Tass, I didn't quite answer your question. So everything, looking back at what's worked well, like Melbourne Money was simply outstanding in terms of the number of people that came into the city, and they came from far and wide as well, which was fantastic. And the amount of money that was injected into the economy was absolutely brilliant. So we're looking at furthering programs like that that have worked well, and we're also looking at new things. We're very conscious of those that have been the most impacted. So programs like Flash Forward, which is our creative laneways, which is 80 artists, we're pushing forward and accelerating that so that more artists have work, but they're also leaving an incredible legacy across the city. And of course, premier events, we don't say the C word anymore at Town Hall. The cancel word. We only say the P word.
You should have seen the look on Macca's face.
I thought
you were going to say conservative.
Well, it is a time for taking risks, you're right. So we're still working, and it could be that we're up to scenario 23, but nonetheless, that sense for traders around town particularly, that we are going ahead with our events, that we will be doing things that bring people into town, gives them some sort of stake in the ground to be able to plan around as well.
I wanted to ask Sally, do you, Clover Moore, your counterpart in Sydney, do you speak with Clover regularly and compare notes, and, you know, do you speak with her regularly?
Yes, so we do have a number of forums in which we speak regularly, and all of that is around learning from each other. Of course, Sydney's going through what I compare to our lockdown two, where it was really hard to see where the end is going to be. And we can see with this Delta strain, for us to be at 29 cases today, how quickly it really does spread. So that sense of where is the finish line is difficult. Of course, this time we do have vaccination, and we really need to double down on that. But yes, we do speak regularly, and it's been interesting because you might remember, I think you do, you played an important role in the election last year, that here in Victoria we decided to go ahead with local government elections.
Yes.
In the middle of lockdowns, whereas in Sydney they've been postponed twice now. And I think that means for Clover and her team, they can really focus on what they need to respond to in the pandemic terms and not be distracted by an election.
So do they have normally, Sally, is their system, is it a postal voting system, or is it an in-person system, their council elections?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, because we'd moved from in-person to posting, and they had moved to posting for the pandemic situation. So I imagine that's still the case, but it's now been postponed for more than 12 months.
Yes.
It was its original date, so I think that's a watch and wait. But it does go to the sense of the efforts that are required to support people through this time and to be planning for the future, and it's every effort required. And I really understand that sense of focus.
So in terms of you know, the planning for the future, and I know that, you know, City of Melbourne's doing a lot of that, and you have to adjust it. We are, though, the reality is, Sally, isn't it, that we are likely, until we get to, you know, 70 or 80%, I'm going for 80, that we are going to have... It's more likely than not that we're going to have more lockdowns. So, as as it evolves, there reaches a point, though, where there is a limit to what council can do. It's really about support, you know, continuing that support for the individuals and the business and, you know, the staff, you know, at council and the suppliers to ensure that when things do improve, you can go, right, this is what we're going to do now. Is that a fair summation?
It is. And I think that's so right. Supporting and sustaining as many people as possible, as many businesses as possible during this time gives us the best chance at really a strong and swift momentum towards recovery. But you know, in your discussions, that people are at breaking point. For some people, they're beyond breaking point. In speaking with traders over the last couple of days, the amount of food they've had to throw out, the staff they have to stand down and those horrible conversations they have to have, the reservations and the plans they've had to cancel and change, it's been, it's demoralising. It's completely, it throws people into a sense of desperation. It's really beyond anger into that sense of what does the future actually hold? What decisions can people make? What options do they have? And when people feel that they've got their backs right up against the wall, it does make it more difficult to make rational decisions, to have sort of those really full discussions. And I do admire so much the people that have been able to hang in there when they are absolutely on the front line with those sorts of decisions in front of them. Can I just say that one of the reasons why we have continued to push for JobKeeper is because JobKeeper was fundamentally transformative for so many business owners and their teams during lockdowns last year. And the fact is that when we come out of lockdowns into bounce backs, we still know that there are restrictions in place. We know it takes a long time for people to start to see revenues come back to anything that's like normal. The whole point of JobKeeper was to recognise that when people's revenues are 70% and below normal, that they need support.
Yeah.
And that would be the case for every single business that's impacted by a lockdown. And there are many that aren't, but most are, that support would continue. If we'd had that, and I know it's expensive, but when you think of the investment that's going to need to be made on the other side to kickstart economies again,
of course, the sense
of giving that support that not only has financial elements, but it has all of the emotional and mental elements as well, is absolutely vital. The fact that we've got other support coming through is fantastic, but it's a new system to have to apply to. It's a new form to fill out. It's new eligibility criteria. It's incredibly wearing on business owners, and that's why we'll continue to ask for JobKeeper to return. We haven't had much luck with that so far, but I think being determined in these situations and raising issues with other levels of government is really important.
Particularly interested in your reflections on how council is looking at managing festivals, events and mass gatherings. And I do have a question here from one of our listeners about what your reflections are on freedom protests. But let's start with a positive.
Oh, it's really simple. Sorry, freedom protests. Bloody dickheads, stay home. For God's sake, stay home, you dickheads.
Thanks, Macca. Yeah. Sally?
Simple message. What a wonderful lead in. thank you. Well, the first priority, Tess, have we gathered ourselves?
Yes.
Is that we absolutely understand we have to work within the health restrictions, and so we work very closely with the Department of Health on all of our event planning, as other organisations do. There are two reasons for that. Obviously, we want to keep people as safe as possible. But the other side is that the hesitancy and the reluctance of people in participating in gatherings, of high-density gatherings, if you like, mass gatherings, is real. And we have to be able to assure them that they're coming into safe environments for them to come. So there are both sides of that argument. It's one of the reasons why I say we get to sort of scenario 23 on some of our planning, because there are so many elements that go into how to deliver COVID-safe events. And if we look at something like Firelight, which was due to happen at the end of June, and then it was going to happen in mid-July, and now hopefully it'll be somewhere later in August, September, down in Docklands, everybody that loves fire, come on down. The fact is that when we talk to our local traders as well, would they rather us go ahead with a smaller event where we have to significantly reduce numbers that can attend as restrictions ease, or would they rather wait until we can maximise the number of people that can come? And overwhelmingly, our local stakeholders and business owners in particular say we'd rather wait until we can maximise numbers.
Right.
So that does mean that we postpone many events so that we can get to the point where it is safe to have larger numbers of people. I think we've also got to get used to the fact that we need ticketing, there are QR codes, there's mask wearing, all of those sorts of things, so that the contact tracers can jump into action if necessary. And it's really important. And it's not just, again, I think to the eloquent point Macca was making earlier, it's not just to your own health. It's the role that you play in other people's health. That we must keep reminding ourselves of. And the protesters, to me, are incredibly selfish, and I understand that people are angry, but we need to channel that energy into doing the right thing so that we get out of Lockdown 6 as quickly as possible, and the only way we're going to do that is to follow the restrictions.
And, you know, perhaps those people can actually do something productive for the community they live in. You know, like doing some shopping for an older person, or, you know, taking the time to support their friends, you know, on Zoom and with phone calls, or ordering something to be delivered to them, rather than the only gift they're giving is spreading the virus. That's all they're doing. And as I say, if their brains were dynamite, Sally, they couldn't part their hair.
Oh, you've got a repertoire.
That he certainly has.
Macca. Look, can we just acknowledge as well that we do keep saying, if you can, please support your local businesses.
Yes.
If you can, please support others and be kind, and also be kind to ourselves. And we've got to look around Victoria and recognise that people's efforts to keep doing that in the current environment, it's completely outstanding. And it is the feedback I get from people in other states, and actually from mayors around the world, that look at Victoria and say, wow, the fact that your community on the whole has remained so cohesive and so focused on doing the right thing, listening to the rules and supporting each other is really something to be proud of.
Sally,
we don't want to be here, but
no,
we're doing
that's
the right
thing. That's right. Sally, I was going to say, the other thing that I noticed during the week is that the council, I believe, released its four-year plan. And so just talk to us, how challenging is it in this environment to actually do some long-term planning like that? And do you take into account COVID, or do you sort of put that to the side and hope for the best?
Well, we do take into account COVID, but of course we need to have plans, and we need to be flexible and understand that they may change, but be really focused around continuing to deliver what we can. I love this council plan because the vision which we created with the community is City of Possibility. And what that says to me is that sense of excitement and hope about the future, where we're a place where anything is possible, and that we can empower people to really to achieve their full potential. And that's what the council plan is all about, is creating that environment in Melbourne after we've been hit so hard, where people can be excited about the future. Another key element of our plans at the moment is that this year's budget is a record budget. We're spending more than $800 million. We do have to keep checking on that budget constantly, because the revenue side gets impacted every day that we're in lockdown. But
sure.
Of course, on the other side, for the community to see that we continue to deliver on our capital works program, which is $250 million this year. It's another record amount for them to see that we continue to deliver important community services, from feeding people who are isolated and vulnerable through to maternal health classes, which continue online even during lockdown. The fact that we continue to plan for city shaping projects like Green Line, and the renewal of Queen Victoria
Green Line, yes, as
well,
yes.
As well as filling potholes. I think that, and certainly the feedback I get from business owners is seeing we're investing in the future of the city means that they can feel better about investing in the future of their business, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah. Can I just ask?
The last thing I'll negotiation with the state government of our revitalisation fund, $200 million. It's a joint fund, and it means that people should feel confident that we've got the resources to deliver programs that will attract people back, and it's precisely why we've put those sorts of measures in place. We're ready to go at scale as soon as it's safe to do so.
Bit of a left field question, Sel. What was the last meal you cooked for you and your partner?
Oh, gosh. The last meal I cooked.
That didn't come out of a paper bag.
Yes, it's a very good question. We're very good supporters of the local economy when it comes to that. I'm trying to think of something that would sound even nice to eat. Macca. It would involve eggs.
Yep.
And some...
Poached or fried? Poached or fried?
Scrambled.
Scrambled.
Ooh.
Yeah, with goat's cheese and silver beet and some capsicum and onion.
There's nothing wrong with
that. It's quick and easy.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's quick and easy.
Nice, nice.
All bought at Queen Victoria Market.
Of course. So if there's a meal, if there was a meal that you, you know, you can order in the ingredients, you know, click and collect or whatever... What would be the what's the meal that you'd actually like to have? Because I know your day is chockers, but what's the meal you'd like to cook? A bit of comfort food on these cold nights for you and your partner and perhaps your sons. What would it be?
Well, I love food that has spices, and I do love spicy food as well. One of our go-tos is Maha.
Of course,
in terms of their takeaway, but also you can make a lot of those meals. I absolutely love all of the flavours, and I love things with yogurt, and I love things with a bit of spice. This week, actually, on Thursday, a couple of hours before lockdown started, I sat with Charles, who has a wonderful Malaysian-Chinese restaurant in Docklands, and loved the way he put spice in the food. Mm. And a number of the locals had gathered to come in and have a drink and give Charles a pat on the back and tell him to hang in there. And it was fantastic to feel that we had food for our bellies, but we also had that lovely support for our, you know, our fellow Melburnians. So it was a really nice way to get out there before lockdown started on Thursday night.
Well, a listener has said here, Sally, try some pesto when cooking eggs in the pan.
Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah, I think I'll give that a go myself, actually.
In fact, I...
We should have a cooking show on, Sat Mac. A bit of a cooking segment.
Yeah, well, the problem is the door of the studio is only a certain width, so if we started to...
I should turn it back on you, Macca. What's your favourite meal been that you've cooked recently?
Look, I think I'm going through a bit of a schnitzel stage.
No, I love a schnitzel. Ooh.
So whether it's beef, veal or pork... And I tell you that the crumbs, of course, must be ciabatta crumbs or cornflake crumbs. And you know that awful smelly parmesan cheese that's in the little bags?
The one that doesn't need refrigerating.
The one that doesn't need refrigerating and smells like old socks. Right?
No.
Well,
it's not even real.
It's not.
You said it, Sally.
Okay,
Thank you.
So the breadcrumbs, the smelly parmesan, and self-raising flour mixed all together. That's the coating.
Yeah.
So doesn't matter what, you know, what sort of schnitzel it is, even for fish, actually. But sit it on a little bed of nice mashed potato with some sliced avocado or something on the side. Really quick meal.
Wow.
But, yeah, you've got to have the smelly cheese in the breadcrumbs.
Right. Of all the lovely parmesan cheeses that you can buy, Macca, you go and buy the cheap, nasty one that's not even real.
Well, one needs to make economy somewhere.
Okay. Sally, always if great chatting with
good,
you.
That's great. Yeah.
It's always great chatting
thanks
with you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for your time this
Take
morning.
Care,
and
everyone.
Thank you so much for,
sharing your thoughts and stories you bring.
Yeah, good on you. Thanks a lot, Sally.
And if you're bored at 11:04, tune in for Grace Time.
Oh, yes, I will. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much, Sal. We'll speak to you soon.
Bye.
Cool.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.